Welcome to Is That Kashmir? The podcast that takes you on a journey to rediscover the questions of our youth and offers a fresh perspective on how we'd answer them today. Join us as we hear stories, insights, and advice from a diverse array of entrepreneurs and executives from around the world. Now get ready to unravel the threads of experience and wisdom with hosts Becca Heft and Anna Kincannon.
Welcome to Is That Kashmir podcast, where we talk about all the things we wish we would have told ourselves when we were younger. Before our guest arrived, Anna, it's been so long since I've seen you. I mean, I think it was the last time that I saw you in April at the I Will event in New York.
Yes, you and I walking New York streets together, holding hands.
Yeah, well, not quite, but I think what was interesting is, you know, sometimes I dread going to New York. I grew up in Chicago, but, you know, New York is a little bigger than Chicago. And, but every time I'm there, I remember how much I love that city.
I love New York. Love it.
Yeah, it's been so fun. What have you been up to?
Oh my gosh, so many life changes, Vex. We sold our house.
Wow.
We downsized. Still with the kids. I'm 10 years ahead of my schedule. You know, financial person I am. I ran some modeling on how much my mortgage and my house is going to be worth in 10, 20 years. And the break-even point was today. Sell it now. Use the money, invest it. And we moved into a luxury resort condominium with our two kids and a dog. And I am loving it. Like, I am loving it. I'm running through the hallways, like, with just, I'm so happy.
Did I see you just got a boat too?
And we did get a boat. So we do live, we also can stay in the marina. There's two bedrooms on the boat. My goal was drink champagne on the boat. I don't need the boat to go places.
I just
need to just be in the marina in the water, and we've accomplished that.
Yeah.
It's
good to hear your voice. It's been far too long. But one of the things that we do on this podcast every time is we do a Kashmir confession. And Anna, why don't you talk a little bit about what we mean by Kashmir confession and talk about who submitted their Kashmir confession?
Yeah. So, you know, our podcast is all about, you know, things that you wish you knew when you were younger, or something to carry you through a difficult day, or something even to put a smile on your face. So the recent confession we got is from Lily Henry from Tennessee. And she said, "Be a light. The world is so dark right now. I learned early on that instead of getting sucked into the yuck, to instead shine your light." And then she also included a picture of a mural where it says, "Be a light."
Oh, so fun. And I think I saw that picture. It was in a plant store by her house, which I thought was so fun. And Anna, you know about my mom passing away in February. And that was my mom's phrase, "Be a light." Do you remember that?
I remember that. And I remember you have a bracelet too.
Yeah, we have at her service, we passed out all the grandkids got Be a Light bracelets, and then everyone got stickers, and they were putting it on her casket. And I think the pastor was going to flip out, but I'm like, my mom would have loved this because, you know, she was 94 and she had like this crazy eclectic life, and she had some, I mean, she saw her little brother get killed getting run over by a bus. She saw her son die. Her other son almost died. She lived through the depression. Like, she had a lot of dark stuff. I like how Lily said it. Don't get sucked into the yuck.
Yeah.
And so that Be a Light Oh, hey, I see Bree. Bree's here, our guest. So, Bree, I don't know if you heard some of us talk about Be a Light. What do you think about Lily's Cashmere Confession?
Oh, my goodness. Well, this is, it's so funny. I have been learning how important it is to be a light, I would say probably over the last 3 years, and diving into the gift of light in the darkness. Like, if it takes the darkest rooms to see the smallest of light, if you think like tea light versus lantern, it doesn't matter. You're going to see it if the room is pitch black. And I think my story and the lessons that I've learned from, I'm almost 40 now, 40 years, is it is that. It is shining your light into the darkness so that you can be a beacon of hope, like a lighthouse to those in the middle of their storm.
And I want to introduce you first, but I'd love to, at some point, Anna, we need to talk about how we met Bree and the experience that she gave us at the I Will event in New York City. But first, Bree Schlereff. Oh, goodness. Did I mess up your name? Can you help me pronounce that, Bree?
It's Schlereff, and everyone messes it up. When I was dating my then boyfriend, now husband at the time, I would sit in my bedroom and say, like, Schlereff.
All right. Like, I got you.
The kid that I don't know how to say his last name.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. Schlereff. I got it. So, Bree is a wife. She mentioned her husband, a pro Major League Baseball player, Daniel Schlereff, and she's a mom to three great kids, Quinn, Drew, and Zane. She's a former Pac-12 All-American gymnast at the University of Arizona, and her life has been defined by resilience and strength. And her story, I will tell you all, is just amazing. As a cancer survivor, Bree understands firsthand that challenges are avenues for growth and the discovery of untapped strength. She has faced adversity head on, walking through a personal cancer diagnosis, supporting a child born with a congenital heart defect, and being part of one of the most prolific sexual abuse cases in sports history. Through it all, Bree has learned that hardship does not define us. Instead, it refines us. She's a recipient of the 2018 Arthur Ashe Courage Award, and she is passionate about empowering women to embrace their full potential. She believes that transparency and strength are essential to being seen and truly known, and she inspires others to rise above their circumstances and be the change they wish to see in the world. And I feel like I should tack on and be a light. I love what you just said around a tea light versus a lantern. It doesn't matter how big it is, as long as it's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also just, you know, the realization of just life is too short, right? Like, be the light, right? Do what makes you happy. And think about, you know, the positive things versus focus on the negatives, right? I think so many of us sometimes just get stuck in the past and not seeing that, like, there's always the light, right? And we will have dark moments, but at the end of the day, we're going to come out and be stronger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll talk more about Bree's, she did this wonderful discussion with a few hundred women in New York City. But I'd like to start with asking Bree a few questions so we can get to know her better. So let's just talk about your journey. If you want to share, if you could just share your story and tell us about Bree and how you got to be where you are today.
Yeah. So Bree as a little person had a lot of energy and was constantly upside down and bouncing off the walls. And so my sweet parents put me in a gymnastics class at the local YMCA because they didn't want me to break my neck, basically. And during that first class, the coach told my parents, like, this kid has a lot of talent and you need to get her into club gymnastics. And so flash forward, I was five at the time, By the time I was 8 years old, I was actively training for the Olympics, traveling all over, training 25 plus hours a week with girls, you know, 6, 7, 8 years older than I was, because I was at such a higher level than girls my own age. And I loved it. I never realized that the gym could be a place not of fun and flipping and laughter until I was about 9 years old and I had my first injury. And that's when I realized, oh, wow, you can get hurt in this. Like, this is a big deal. And I think seeing it through the child perspective of, like, kids are free. They don't think about cause and effect and that sort of thing. So I had strength and flexibility and bravery on my side up until I got hurt and landed me a surgery and in the hospital. And
oh no.
And so when fear was introduced into the sport, it dramatically changed my perspective. And I think the coach's perspective on this shiny penny gymnast that was so talented that would take them to the Olympics and beyond was like, okay, well, it almost put me in a pressure cooker, I guess. And so as I was coming back from that injury and trying to train and retrain, my arm that had a compound ended up having a compound fracture fixed. My body in that time, because I wasn't training all those hours every week, I grew, other injuries started happening, and the gym became a very scary and dark place for me, where I can remember, like, there was specific business establishments along the road on the hour drive that I would see it, and I would, like, the nerves would get a little bit more, they would get a little bit more, they would get a little bit more. But there was this wrestle with identity, because I was Bree the gymnast and I was Bree the one that won all the competitions. And I just think that because I was so good at it, I didn't realize that I ever had the choice to get out of it. And the environment that I was placed in was one where you weren't allowed to cry if you were frustrated or hurt. You weren't allowed really to show much emotion. Fear was something to be looked at and overcome and not something to step back and discern. So I felt like I was going against my gut intuition every single day for hours and hours at a time. And I guess if you flash forward, gymnastics wasn't all bad. It afforded me so many amazing opportunities. And one of those opportunities was to go to the University of Arizona on a full ride scholarship for gymnastics.
Amazing.
Yeah. And that's where I met my husband, who was a baseball player. And so it was all part of the plan. And I don't want it to seem like, oh, every day was absolutely miserable. Like, I loved my teammates. There were bright spots, definitely, amidst a lot of the darkness. But I realized I had a thyroid cancer diagnosis when I was 25 years old. And when they went in to take out my thyroid, they found that the cancer had wrapped itself around my vocal cords and my voice box. And to me, that was just the metaphor of the stress it took my body to go against my body's design of holding everything in and not speaking up for myself and not crying when I felt pain or saying, hey, I'm afraid, I don't want to do that yet. All those years of that, I believe, is what really settled the cancer into my voice box. And for months, I didn't know if I'd be able to have a full conversation ever again, because my voice was scratchy. It was weak. I remember sucking on lemon heads to, like, try to get my saliva to,
yeah,
you know, like that tart, like, okay, this is going to help, so it doesn't feel so dry. And when my voice started coming back, I just vowed to myself, like, my voice matters and I'm going to start using it, really having no idea that, about 4 years later, the Larry Nassar case would make its way into the media through an article in the Indy Star first, and then later would be broadcast across national television when he was having his court hearing. But Larry was a person that I was with every single week, sometimes multiple times a week. My first appointment was a high hamstring tear, and I was 9 years old, almost 10. And he was the person to me that would affirm the pain that I was feeling that my coach would discount. So I would go to my coach and say, "This hurts." And he would say, "You're fine. Get back up and do 10 more. Well, then wow. I would go to Larry and he would say, "Oh, this hurts because it's torn, it's bruised, it's broken, it's whatever it is." And so to me, he was this safe place and almost like the hero, because he made me feel like I wasn't crazy. And I can remember turning on the court cases and hearing the first day and hearing story after story from girls that was identical to my story. And it was like, you know, the alarm bells and all the red flags were being waved, because never had it occurred to me that what he was doing to me wasn't medically necessary. And that was a hard, dark place for me. I provided my victim impact statement, just an email to the lawyer. I didn't feel like I was ready to go and testify in court at that point in time, because I was still coming to terms with what would have been 30 years of a friendship with him that, you know, you're just completely dumbfounded. It's the most unbelievable thing I think that I've ever had to comprehend so far in my life was that, oh my gosh, this man that was healer was actually using his platform, being the Olympic team doctor. You know, he was like the hero of medicine in the gymnastics community, and what he did with that was hurt all of us. Like it just didn't make sense to me.
You've had quite just this really deep, moving story. You talk about, you know, you're as a gymnast, you talk about having your cancer diagnosis. A few years after that, you have a child with a congenital heart defect. And then and in the middle of this, you're facing some of the past. And one of the things I really appreciated about your story, Bree, was that you didn't realize that it was bad when it was happening to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think so many women can say the exact same thing if something happened to them when they were younger. And I'm one of those women. Mm-hmm. So I heard that story, that was so touching to me. Let me ask you this. How, like all this, as Lily said it from Tennessee, all the yuck, you had all this yuck happen. How did that shape your current mindset that you carry now?
Here's what I know to be true is when you are going through any yuck situation, any storm, any hardship, any dark time, it's really your perspective that can be the launching pad for your healing or your detriment to your healing. I believe that it's the difference between how you see your situation. You can cope through it, like a capital C, which is a lot of woe is me. Of course this happened to me, or, you know, I didn't get picked for this, or why me? Why me? Like, I'm just coping. I'm just begrudgingly going through the day-to-day motions. Or I can hope through the situation and look at it like, this isn't meant to slow me. This is meant to grow me. So how can I grow through this? What lessons am I supposed to be learning? Like, you know, they say when a bone breaks, it comes back and it's stronger. So, okay, this thing, how am I going to get stronger because of it? And I have found that the best healing has come through being able to share my story with somebody else that is walking through something that I've already been through. The moms that I get connected to through, you know, 5 degrees of separation or whatever it is, that's like, I just found out that my baby has a congenital heart defect. I'm freaking out. I can't get off the floor. I don't know what to do. Like, mm-hmm. you know, or someone that has a cancer diagnosis or someone that is going through an abusive situation. Like, yes, Larry Nassar, there was a sexual abuse case, but I was also verbally abused and attacked on a daily basis. There was, you know, things thrown at me, hair being pulled, like physical abuse situations. I've walked through depression. I've walked through anxiety. I have still PTSD symptoms that are very real to me. But when I shift my mindset and I can say to someone, like, I know that you're going to get through this because I did. And there was a time when I didn't think I would be able to. Like, I can't heal you, but I can be there for you and walk through this with you. And just like the lighthouse, you know, like that's how ships find harbor in the middle of a storm, is like one beacon of light. And so imagine, like, as the tea light to the lantern thing, some people think, oh, my story's not that big. Like, what I went through doesn't matter. And it matters to someone else who's walking through that. You better believe it. It matters immensely.
Yeah. Brie, as you're telling your story, I feel like I have so many moments where I just got goosebumps. And I just want to say thank you yes. for finding your voice. Thank you for sharing, right? Your story. I mean, you're an incredibly strong individual. Right? Just a strong human. So thank you for that. And as we're talking about this lighthouse effect, right? It's those lighthouse effect stories that just come from different people and that lift you up and just kind of reminds you, hey, you're not alone, right? Mm-hmm. There's a reason I went through this difficult time. And you know, to some extent, yeah, I did it, right? And yeah. then held it.
Yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't choose it, but right. because it chose you, good, bad, or indifferent, it's like, what are you gonna do with it? You have to walk through it regardless.
Yeah.
So
what's the other alternative?
Exactly.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay to cry too, right?
Oh, my.
Right? Like,
which is really yeah. hard for me personally. I don't know why, ladies, but it is really hard. Like, you know, like even when my mom passing, like I'm going to a grief group right now because I haven't learned how to cry that well. So,
yeah. I didn't shed a tear for, I kid you not, like 20 years. And it was a lot of therapy and understanding, like, your tears, this is so crazy, especially as women, but your tears coming from your eyeducts are from a specific hormone in your body that when it's released, it's a comfort hormone. And so your tears literally are meant to comfort you. They're not meant to shame you. Like your body from a molecular level is like, no, this is how I'm going to comfort myself is through crying. And think about, like, I can cry for other people. Like, they tell me their stories and I'm like crying. I'm trying to comfort them. It's my body's way of empathizing with their situation. So tears are beautiful. They are a gift. Yeah. You'll find your tears.
I promise. And it takes time, you know, like after my dad passed, I couldn't go to like grief counseling until a year after. Mm. Like I needed to be mentally ready to mm-hmm. face the grief. Mm-hmm. Like, and I had, you know, friends and people like, you need to do this. And like, I know I need to, but I can't do it until I'm ready.
Yeah.
But absolutely. It took me a year. And well, then I just cried. And then I just cried. I would go to the, you know, a therapist, and I was specific to grief healing. And I just allowed myself to cry.
Mm. Yeah. Well, let's talk about your Arthur Ashe Courage Award in 2018. Mm-hmm. That is such, like, that's an amazing award. It's an incredible mm-hmm. honor. Brie, what did that moment symbolize to you personally?
I think it provided me like a sincere belief that I was strong. It came, all 300 and something sister survivors were awarded the Arthur Ashe of Courage Award. And I very much so was still navigating the darkness in the time that that award went out. And at first it was a bit of imposter syndrome, to be totally honest, of like courage, like I don't feel very courageous right now. Because at the time, I think I carried a lot of shame for not going into the courtroom and directly giving my victim impact statement. I thought that was the one and only time I would ever have to share my story and to speak up for the little girl, Brie, that was told that you don't get a voice, your voice doesn't matter. And I think it provided me a little bit of hope of like, okay, I am courageous. Every day I get up and I choose to see the good in the day. And I choose to hold my kids and, you know, like I'm healing, but it's a choice every day. I'm going to choose courage and I'm going to choose forgiveness. And it takes courage to forgive. It's the harder of the two, for sure.
Yes.
And so I think that kind of began this forgiveness journey in a way of like, I'm going to choose the hard because I want to free myself of all connection or anything that ties me to Larry Nassar and to my coach, John Getter. Like, I'm going to forgive them both. And then I'm going to be free of them both.
Yeah. Forgiveness is such a beautiful, beautiful thing. And to your point, it's beautiful because the anger just dissipates then.
Mm-hmm.
And your beauty, internal beauty, comes out instead of holding on to the yeah.
And Brie, being a mom to a daughter, how do you feel like it's impacts your parenting?
Oh my gosh.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Like,
well, is she in gymnastics?
No, took care of that. One that's not flexible and one that is not brave. So.
There you go. He knows what he's doing.
Yes. You know, it makes me more eyes open, ears open. It's absolutely something that we talk about of when the small voice in your head says, no, it's not okay. Like that voice, it's okay for it to come out. I was told, you know, be tough. And the moment like my kids start crying, I'm like, oh, I'm so proud of you. You know, like, this is so good. We're getting our frustration out. Oh, like, you know, you're sad. Let's get your sadness out. Like, I think it's changed the way that I've chosen to parent them and affirm their emotions because that just wasn't something that I had the privilege of hearing.
Yeah, I love that. And what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about, we did this, I don't know if it's a ceremony or it was a experience that you created at the I Will event in New York City. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about what you did. And I'd love to share that my personal impact too.
It was
just a beautiful, memorable experience.
So the idea came to me just researching hope and how hope can be collectively experienced and hope can be shared and it can be borrowed. And so I've worked in the nonprofit event space for almost a decade, and I really believe that things are solidified by way of experience. And so I wanted, as almost like a gift, I'm like, how can I gift hope to everyone there? And I talk about hope being a light. And so I was kind of like, okay, if it can be collectively experienced and it can be gifted, I was very nervous about re-traumatizing or triggering people in that room, because you have a room of 200 women. There are absolutely more people than me that have gone through abuse. And, you know, I wanted to be sensitive to that. So I thought, instead of us verbalizing and speaking our pain or something that we've walked through, can we do it by illuminating the space with light? And so that's kind of how I came up with this exercise of collectively experiencing hope and sharing, and just watching one by one the dark room light up.
Yeah. And I mean, so, it was impressive. And if you weren't there, so we were in the middle of New York City in the, I don't know, on the top floor, one of the skyscrapers, right? And all the lights were down, the windows were closed, and we were able to lit up candles. It was so neat.
It was neat.
Sorry, oh, I was going to say, I think I started with my one candle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously it was still pretty dark with one candle, but I started and I said, you know, I'm a survivor of cancer. So if there's any other people in here that have survived cancer or are walking through someone that has a current cancer diagnosis, please stand. And then I would take my candle and light their candles. And so you go from one person to maybe, I don't know, 10 people, maybe not that many, but. And then the next was, if you are a survivor of abuse of any kind, please stand. And so all you have to do is stand and hold your candle. And then someone who is standing already would then take their candlelight and gift it to the next kind of phase of standing up. Mm-hmm. And you end with a room where everyone's on their feet, and the room is illuminated by pieces of everyone's story.
And it was a beautiful moment, I have to tell you. So I had mentioned that, when I was a teenager, I had an abuse situation in the fast food restaurant that I had worked at. And so when you said, has anyone suffered abuse? I stood up and I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot about this, right? Because you push it out of your head. And so I lit my candle, and then I saw this person, this woman who I've known for a couple of years and we're starting to be friends, but she stood up the same time I did. And we just held hands together. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was just a moment, a connection moment that, like, unsaid words of what we experienced together, which I thought was absolutely beautiful. I'm getting shivers just talking about it.
It's just, right. It's just hope, and you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. That's right? It. Yeah. You are not alone. And I think so many times, especially, I don't know, today, it's so hard for a woman in leadership, for, and even if you're not in leadership, but just to face some of these challenges, and you think you have to do it alone, and you don't. Yeah.
It's the everyone wears a mask. My life is perfect on social. This is my highlight reel.
Yeah, and, please. Yeah. Preach, girl, preach.
Yeah. Like, take off the mask. Be free.
Exactly. I love it. Okay. So I have a couple things I want to do before we close. Mm-hmm. Before Anna asks what your cashmere confession is, because we're going to ask you, I want to do a rapid fire of questions, and it's just fun. It's fun stuff. Okay.
Great.
So, what's one word that describes you, Bree?
Silly.
I love it. I want to know more, but we'll have a glass of wine sometime to learn more. Yes. Favorite self-care ritual?
Naps.
You are my person. I love that.
Give me a 20-minute nap.
Yeah, exactly. Anna, are you a nap lover too?
Oh, I'm obsessed, Anna.
I am not a good napper.
Oh,
like
no.
if I nap, I need like hours. I'm not a quick napper.
Like that's funny. All right, couple more questions. A woman who inspires you.
I would say this is one of my friends and the pastor's wife. Her name is Hannah Olette. She inspires me.
Oh, that's amazing. And why would you say she inspires you?
She is vibrant and loves everyone and has been a light to me. She was the person that first asked me to share my story, and I just will forever be indebted to her because it was something that I never thought that I could do and get through it. And it was like, I talked about being in the pressure cooker, think of an Instapot. It was like, she gave me the gift to take the lid off the Instapot and be like, it's okay.
Amazing. All right. Last quick fire question. Favorite date with your husband? What's the most favorite thing you guys like to do?
Find a hole in the wall taco restaurant, eat a lot of chips, salsa, tacos, and then go and walk the beach at sunset.
I love it. I love it. All right, Anna, take us home.
Okay, Brie. What is your cashmere confession? Something that you wish you told your younger self?
Okay, so I thought about this. Here it is. People will say you have two ears and one mouth, so you should listen twice as much as you speak. I think, yes, we should be good listeners. We should be listeners beyond hearers. But I think that we were given one mouth because our words hold such power that we should be wise in what we speak over ourselves and others.
Love, love. Oh, Brie, thank you so much for spending time with Anna and I on the podcast. If people want to follow you on social, where can they follow you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, Brie Schlereth, and I actually, at the end of this week, will be launching my website to hopefully speak to more audiences and people, and that'll be brieschlereth.com. So I'm really excited. I have no idea where this will take me, but there will be a place to find me there.
That's there awesome. Will be.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Brie, keep using your voice. It is the story you tell. It's beautiful. It's touching. We can all learn from it. So thank you so much.
I will. Thank you. Thank you guys.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
This has been Is That Cashmere? If you want to share your cashmere confession or like to share some of your personal insights about your career journey, email cashmereconfession@gmail.com. Is That Cashmere with Becca Heft and Anna Kincannon is a production of the Morst Heft Group.